Time for another update from Quincy School Committee Vice Chair Anthony Andronico about the latest Quincy School Committee meeting, which Anthony is continuing even though school is out.
Yeah, that's right. Good to see you again, Joe. But yeah, so we're continuing to meet over the course of the summer. You know, this summer session usually doesn't happen, but we have just a few things going on. You know, we're talking about school culture. We're talking about reopening in the midst of COVID and what those plans need to look like. And not to mention, we're also searching for a permanent superintendent to really lead us into the fall and beyond. So yeah, we need to keep meeting and making sure that we're on top of these issues.
Sure. Before we talk about all that stuff, how is the registration for graduation ceremonies going? Have you heard?
I have. So it's actually pretty robust. It looks like we're getting about 75% of students or so signing up. So we're still going to move forward with you know, that one plan for North Quincy High School. And Quincy High School, their attendance or reported attendance is high enough where they will still require two sessions. You know, it's going to look a little bit different, but I think we're excited to be able to offer them that last hurrah that I think they do deserve.
Okay, so it's July 24th, 6 p.m., and then July 25th for Quincy High School at 10 a.m. and 4 p.m.
That's right. Yeah, it's you can tell you've been paying attention. I know we've been talking about it. It seems like every interview for the last couple months now.
Yes, yeah. But in person at Veterans Stadium, and we're planning to cover them all live right here on QATV too. So for folks who obviously can't make it because of the space restrictions, they'll be able to watch it on TV.
Right. We really appreciate that. You know, we're blessed to have such a great partner in QATV. And I just want to remind the folks at home that, you know, we are following the health and safety guidelines given to us for graduations. Everyone is going to be spaced out at least 6 feet. You know, we have permanent ticketing where someone, you know, has an assigned seating. They'll be escorted to their seats, and we're limiting speakers and platform guests to just those that typically speak at those graduations. So we're following those guidelines, and we're looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm guessing no big congregating on the field afterwards, right?
That is correct. Yeah, so that's one part that you know, we still do need to ensure. You know, don't rush the field after graduation. I know it can be very difficult because all you want to do after your child graduates or you graduate, you just want to see your family. You want to see people that are closest to you. But that's one that we do need to caution against given the potential risks.
Sure, absolutely. All right, on to the latest meeting. What was number one?
So I'd say number one, you know, we talked a lot about, you know, QPS culture, you know, the culture within our walls. What are we doing to make sure that everyone has a safe and supportive environment where they feel like their voice matters, where they feel like they specifically matter? You know, we've had a few social media accounts that have anonymously talked about their potential experiences, or rather experiences with racial bias within our schools. And you know, it's not overt racism. It's not to that effect, but there are things like microaggressions, or, you know, people maybe just not fully understanding the impact of their words. And, you know, it's provided us with an opportunity, I think, to work on those issues. You know, no community is immune from these types of issues, even if you have a more diverse student population like Quincy, where, you know, we're a minority majority district. So we have some work to do, and, you know, it's okay to say that. And I think everyone, at least in our system, all of our staff and our students, so they want to be a part of that solution, and they want to work towards that goal. So, you know, with that in mind, I'd actually talked with a few of the organizers of not only the social media accounts, but the various petitions that have been going around. You know, I've seen a few in the Quincy Sun. We've had a couple sent to us. And, you know, I've been taking the time just to sit down and talk with these folks over the phone to gain their perspective. And I think a lot of the things that they're asking for aren't out of line. I see them as totally reasonable. I know a lot of times folks can be hesitant to change, or they can take things personally. That's not how I take that at all. I just see that as highlighting an issue, and it's my job as a school committee member to address those concerns. Now that's the role. So I just wanted to go over, I have the sheet here in front of me about a couple of things that, you know, they had been asking for in their petitions. And some of them, you know, the school committee has already begun working on or committed to prior. So this isn't new to us, but we want to make sure that this is a two-way street of communication. So just a few of them, you know, they're looking for a differentiation in our policies between bullying and hate speech or racial violence. They're looking for a more clear avenue to report instances of racial bias in our schools. They're looking for a commitment to diversity training for all of our staff. They're looking to establish a monthly forum to, within their school community to talk about these issues. And, you know, they want us to include more diverse perspectives within our curricula in our works or summer reading books or even within our school libraries. And, you know, they're looking for us to diversify our workforce. And none of those things to me are out of line by any means. A few of them the school committee has already worked on. You know, last year we voted to have a goal to diversify our workforce to better reflect, you know, our student population. I mean, I don't find that to be, I do find that to be something that we should be working for. And we unanimously agreed last year that that's something we should be doing. We've talked about incorporating more diverse works because in our survey from last year, you know, we saw that students felt, only about half of them felt that they read books that had characters that they could relate to or that looked like them. So we identified that area. And more recently, you know, we've talked about diversity training for staff. So there's always more work to be done, and I think we'll be able to get there.
Will these be kind of implemented at the same level at every grade, do you think, Anthony? Or will elementary schools look a little different than high schools when it comes to addressing these issues?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, every level is going to have or should have some, you know, some varying degree of talking about these things. But, you know, the manner in which you talk about them is obviously very different. You know, I go back to how we learn history, right? The way that you talk about the Revolutionary War with an elementary school student is very, very different than how you talk about that same topic with a high school student in AP US history, for example. So, you know, regardless of what the material is, it's going to be different, but I think overall the messaging does need to be similar. But, you know, we have set up an avenue now where we can talk about these things. At the meeting, I did propose for my colleagues the establishment of the Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Subcommittee, of which I will chair. And Mr. Guttrow and Mrs. Lebo are going to join me as members on that committee. So we have a structure in place to talk about this stuff. I think it's important that even after the more recent round of activism is over, that we still talk about these issues, because just because people are speaking up more about them, it doesn't mean that after they stop that these issues are solved or you're done discussing them. So we need to have that moving forward. I am proud to say that Quincy is one of only a handful of school committees in the state to have a subcommittee specifically dedicated to these issues. And that's not to say that we are further along than other communities or that, you know, other communities aren't doing anything. They absolutely are, and some are further ahead than us. But we are saying that this issue is important. It's going to continue to be important. And that's why I had proposed that we set this up as a permanent subcommittee and not just an ad hoc to deal with this specific time that we're in. So I think we have a lot of work to do. But, you know, we're going to need buy-in from everyone in the community to make sure that we address these concerns and, you know, work towards something together.
You anticipate there will be outside groups brought in to deal specifically with, say, staff training or at least facilitating, you know, discussion among staff and students?
Yeah, I would say so. We had Visions Inc. brought in to talk with us at our last meeting just about some of the services they offer, you know, what were their thoughts on these issues, you know, as from an outsider perspective on Quincy, what are some things that you can maybe recommend moving forward? You know, we've already committed to diversity training for staff. A few of those sessions have already taken place. at the higher up level, and we're looking to implement that, further down the line for staff, for our teachers, and make sure that they're integrated into this as well, because they're going to have to be. So we talked about that. And I think when we talk about maybe having a listening session where people can vent and have a space where they feel comfortable talking about these things, if you have an employee of Quincy Public Schools be the moderator or responsible, I'm not certain if people are going to feel 100% comfortable. And that's not to say they're not comfortable with the individual. They're just not comfortable with the title that that individual holds. And so we're going to have to look at bringing in a third party. Who that is remains to be seen. And that's something the committee is going to work out over the summer, and the administration's going to have to work out, though.
Yeah, that's a great point. Not only when it comes to issues of racial justice, even bullying. Sometimes folks just need to have a safe place where they feel that they can, talk about that, where they won't be intimidated or judged, basically.
Right. And, that's sort of the impetus for some of these social media accounts is that, at a certain point, there were people that felt that they couldn't go to a QPS employee to talk about that. And that's really disheartening as a school member. It's disheartening as someone that went through QPS and just cares about Quincy. I want people to feel like, this is a trusted place. Like you can trust us. We genuinely care about these issues, and we'll hear you out, and we'll work with you on these things. So I hope that's the message that people get moving forward, is that we do care. We care about everyone's perspective, and, we're committed to working together on it.
Very good. We have to look forward to the fall, whatever that might look like. And I know that there's a specialized group of folks that are working on that.
Yeah, so we have our reopening task force, which is about 20 members of various stakeholders, folks that work on the school side, folks that work on the city side, public buildings, legal, health. It's just it's a very large group.
Yeah. Any students in that group, Anthony?
I can't recall off the top of my head, but I do know I'm not a part of those specific discussions yet.
Right.
That group is reaching out actually this week through virtual focus groups. Notifications went out last week to get the parent and student perspective on reopening. What are families comfortable with? What are they not comfortable with? What are they looking for in a reopening plan? In just getting those thoughts. So, parent input and student input is crucial for us. We do have a survey out to our teachers as well, because they're certainly a very large part of this. So we're still working through, the task force is still working through what those plans are going to look like. But per state guidelines, we have to have a full in-person plan, a full remote plan, and also a hybrid plan. So three plans need to be presented to the school committee or developed by the school committee. The reopening task force is taking on that work. And we should have a plan, I'd say, in another week and a half to 2 weeks, sort of closer to the end of July. And then again, state requests, these aren't really guidelines, but state requests, Commissioner Riley did ask the school committees not vote on a plan for reopening until August at the earliest. So, we're trying to balance input from the community, listening to public health experts, and then beyond that, after you pick a plan, we do need to leave enough time to clearly communicate that plan and communicate to families what are the contingency plans going to look like. Let's say you go with a hybrid plan or full in person, well, at what point do you scale back if there's a rise in positive cases in a school, in people that come into contact with those folks, or within the city in general? Maybe they're not school personnel, they're not families that go to QPS, but cases are higher.
Mm-hmm.
Those are still things that are going to be worked out. We have a lot of difficult questions, and we're doing our best, and I understand essentially, regardless of the plan that we pick, know, some people are going to be happy and others aren't going to be happy. It's just sort of the situation we're in. But, you know, we do want to make sure that families feel heard and that we pick one plan that we can at the time say that this was the right move and point to the public health data as to why, you know, any plan we pick needs to be backed up by that data.
Yeah, I know it's an issue even now over the summertime. A special ed class up at North, some folks are being forced to quarantine because one of the teachers tested positive. So it's here. It's not going away. It needs to be dealt with.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. We've already encountered it. You know, just the first couple of weeks of that very, very limited program. You know, very limited in scope and number of individuals involved, and you know, I've already had to say to a family or a teacher, you know, that you have to quarantine. That's how it goes. So yeah, even if you go back in a hybrid model, let's say a teacher comes down with COVID, then what do you do? So that teacher obviously quarantines.
Right.
All of their students quarantine. If they're at the high school level and they have multiple classes, do all of those classes have to quarantine?
Right.
And then all those families? So a lot of difficult questions, and we certainly know that, you know, I personally do not have all the answers. I don't think I will end up having a full answer to every single question, but, you know, we're going to have to make a judgment call at a certain point in time.
Yeah.
And again, if families or if anyone listening has an opinion, you know, you can always reach out to me or any of my colleagues via email. Mine is anthonyandronico@quincypublicschools.com. And, every email address does have the same layout, at least for school committee members, first and last name at QPS, QuincyPublicSchools.com.
I know the state teachers union is lobbying for kind of a phased in reopening of public schools, just like, you know, the economy. Is that something that you're considering in Quincy too, do you think?
No, I think at this point we're open to anything. I think sometimes we can get a little wrapped up in state groups or even national groups that say, well, this is how you should be doing it.
Yeah.
But when it comes down to it, every community is different.
Yeah.
Every one, you know, Quincy isn't Boston. And at the same time, you know, Quincy isn't Nantucket, where they're already isolated. And I don't think they have any cases at this point in time, or they're extremely limited. So mm-hmm. every community is different. I'm more interested to know what our Quincy teachers feel, you know, and I think I let the QEA speak for themselves on if they agree with the MTA's plan or proposed plan or not. But, you know, you need to work with all of your stakeholders, and that includes your teachers. And, you know, I don't want to get too wrapped up in what the MTA and the state level has to say on it. I'm focused on the local.
Very good. Well, whatever you decide, we'll help you get the word out here at QATV, certainly.
We appreciate that. Thanks, Joe.
Oh, and by the way, during all of this, you still have to pick a new superintendent.
Yeah, that's right. How could we almost forget? So, yeah, where we're at right now in the superintendent search, I actually this week potentially as you and I speak, Joe, the search committee is interviewing semi-finalists for the position. From my recollection, they received about 20 candidates or so that were from across the country. And they picked, I believe, eight or nine semifinalists that are also from across the country. I mean, when we say it's a national search, we meant it. And not only did we get applicants from across the country, but we've at the very least selected semifinalists from across the country. And we also have a few local candidates. So it's, you know, it depends. You know, I can't talk specifics on it, but, you know, they're interviewing semifinalists. And again, at the end of those interviews, the search committee will pick 3 to 6 external candidates to give as finalists to us. And the school committee will also interview any internal candidates as semifinalists. So they'll make the decision on that, internal or external. The search committee will be scoring individuals according to the criteria that we came up with on a matrix. That information will be handed over to the school committee, and then we'll go from there. We do have a brief meeting, the school committee, in the next day or so to talk about the timeline. I think we're going to ultimately take a vote to push out the rest of the timeline by 1 week, So finalist interviews would begin on August 3rd and run for two full weeks, you know, the week of August 3rd, the week of August 10th. And then the following week, we would look at making a vote on the 19th of August for a permanent superintendent. And then from there, just as a reminder, you know, the next superintendent doesn't just start right away. Their start date is pending contract negotiations. And every start date or every candidate is going to have a different situation. You know, mm-hmm. they could, a current superintendent, you know, pretty far away. They could be a separate interim superintendent. They could be an assistant superintendent somewhere, or any number of things. I don't really pretend to know because we haven't picked one. But that start date is TBD, depending on negotiations by the school committee.
Okay, very good. I think we've touched on a lot for sure.
Yeah, and actually, just before we go, I want to make sure folks know. We did publish the findings of the leadership profile survey. You know, we had in total over 1,000 people respond to that survey. It was 973 responses on the online survey, 120 people in the virtual focus groups that helped inform it. And that was prepared by the Mass Association of School Committees. It gives the positive, the negative, the challenges, our opportunities. Regardless of what the school committee has to say, you know, this isn't a document that says, you know, look at how great we are, or you know, these are where we think are areas for improvement. It's just an honest look at, you know, the current state of QPS, some of the challenges the next superintendent will need to tackle, and, you know, what the community is looking for in a superintendent. And I will say, that one of the areas that was highlighted as an area for growth and opportunity for us was equity and diversity. So those areas were highlighted, and this was out in the field for responses for this massive wave of activism. So, you know, these were issues that we were going to have to talk about regardless of this most recent wave of activism. And I think just underscores that these are important, and they're going to continue to be important as we move forward.
Yeah, I think the George Floyd incident was certainly the spark, you know, that lit a lot of the burning embers across the country.
No, absolutely. And, you know, to just point out on top of that, you know, this was also before, you know, the social media accounts had been created specific to Quincy, or we had received any sort of letter or petition from these groups. So these were issues before; they're going to continue to be issues. But it does have a lot of other great things in it. You know, that highlight our strengths, highlight, you know, opportunities for growth for us, what Quincy is looking for, and then you know, how different groups within Quincy what they picked as their priorities. So it's given us a lot to think about. I really do appreciate everyone that took the time to fill that out. I know it wasn't easy, but it's given us some really great feedback.
Okay, and those results are on the school website, Anthony?
Yes, you can go to quincypublicschools.com, and then there's a quick link with the superintendent search tab, and it's on that page as a hyperlink document, and you can find it there.
Gotcha. Speaking of an ongoing issue, I have to ask it. Did the issue of Yaku come up at the last meeting?
No, it didn't really come up a ton. But I mean, I do want to make sure the folks know that we've most certainly heard those outcries. And, you know, I think the time is coming to have that discussion. It's an incredibly sensitive topic. There are very, very passionate individuals, you know, those that say, or advocate for full removal of Yaku, those that say, you know, you can't touch it at all. When it comes down to it, really for me, I'll do whatever the students of North Quincy High want to do. You know, last year, the Quincy Point, Point Webster, you know, changed their mascot to the Navigators.
Great.
No one asked the school committee what we thought, if we should vote to change theirs. I understand this is a different situation. But, you know, when you have a public outcry like this, the last thing I want to do is say, okay, we're going to change the mascot and this is your new mascot, when the whole point of this was to have a conversation and student input. So while I understand, you know, people are asking the school committee to, you know, take a hard stance and do what you feel is right, or vote to get rid of it or vote to keep it, it's not our mascot. It's the mascot from North Quincy High School and their students. You know, I was a student at North Quincy High School. I graduated in 2011. And if I, at that time, had had someone come in and say, this is your new mascot, if I didn't get a say in that, I'd be pretty upset about it because it's my school. So I definitely understand, you know, it's a difficult situation for a lot of folks, but all I want to do is make sure that the students feel heard and the students get that input that I think they deserve. You know, I do trust their judgment on this.
All right. Very good. Appreciate your time, Anthony. Great to talk to you.
Thanks, Joe. Looking forward to next time.
All right. Be well.